Lily Tomlin once said, "Why is it when we talk to God, we're said to be praying, but when God talks to us, we're schizophrenic?" This is a good question, since those of us in the mental health field often are told by patients that they hear voices or that God talks to them. This is considered a disorder. As a Jewish boy growing up in Lynn, Massachusetts, I went to Temple Beth El Hebrew School 2 afternoons a week and on Sunday mornings. There I learned these wonderful Bible stories from the Torah, the 5 books of Moses, of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Leah, and Rachel, and Joseph and his brothers, and Moses, and of the main character, God. On Saturday morning in the synagogue, the Torah is raised and held up for the entire congregation to see. The congregation sings, "This is the Torah Moses set before the children of Israel, from the mouth of God, in the hand of Moses." Orthodox Jews believe that God dictated the Torah to Moses on Mount Sinai, but most biblical scholars agree that the Bible, the 5 books of Moses, or the Old Testament, was written over many centuries and modified by scribes beginning in 1000 BCE, before the Common Era. Thus, it is agreed among scholars that all these stories that I grew up with never really happened. They are myths, but myths can be very powerful. These Bible stories exist in people's minds, and they deal with themes of aggression, war, and especially sacrifice, which are just as relevant today as they were in biblical times. Myths are the carriers of unconscious fantasy. As a psychoanalyst opposed to war, there is one story that has particular resonance, the binding of Isaac. The story of Abraham, heeding God's call to sacrifice his son Isaac, has captured the imagination of artists, religious thinkers, and psychoanalysts. Even Bob Dylan has weighed in. In 1965, he wrote a song called Highway 61 Revisited. Here is the lyric to the first chorus. "Oh, God said to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe says, man, you must be putting me on. God say, no. Abe say, what? God say, you can do what you want, Abe. But the next time you see me coming, you better run. Well, Abe says, where do you want this killing done? God says, out on Highway 61. I think one of the reasons this has captured so many people's imagination is it's really terrifying, and I think that's one way of dealing with the terrors, to write a song like that. I'm going to read the story. It's chapter 22 of Genesis, and it's really not too long. "And it came to pass after these things that God did prove Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. And he said, take now thy son, thine only son whom thou lovest, even Isaac, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his ass and took 2 of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. And he cleaved the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. On the 3rd day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship and come back to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they both went together. And Isaac spoke unto Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they both went together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And he said, lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou art a God-fearing man, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And we all heave a sigh of relief. While the story itself is a myth, commentators are real people, and much has been written about this story over the centuries. Religious commentators usually emphasize that God is testing Abraham, and that Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son proves his devotion to God. In 1941, Dr. J.H. Hertz, chief rabbi of the British Empire, stated, quote, "The proofs of a man's love of God are his willingness to serve him with all his heart, all his soul, and all his might, as well as his readiness to sacrifice unto him what is even dearer than life. God's behavior in this test goes unquestioned." More contemporary religious writers ask more questions, and feminist writers bring a more critical attitude toward God. Where is Sarah, Abraham's wife and Isaac's mother, during all this? Why didn't Abraham argue with God as he did when he interceded on behalf of the people of Sodom, saying to God, "Wilt thou indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked?" and bargaining with God to reduce the number of righteous men in Sodom from 50 to 10. Again, however, we find the same attempt to defend God. Michael Lerner, in his 1994 book, Jewish Renewal, says that the voice Abraham hears is not the true voice of God. He sees in the relationship of Abraham with his son a repetition of Abraham's abandonment and betrayal by his own father. Lerner sees Abraham as a trauma victim, and the miracle is that he is able at the last moment to break with the emotional pain of his own past and not do to his son what was done to him. As a child, Abraham had challenged his father's worship of idols. His father delivered him to the ruler Nimrod, who threw him into a fiery furnace. Abraham was miraculously saved, but was scathed inwardly, according to Lerner. Two feminist writers bring a fresh look at these events. Aviva Cantor sees God as a patriarchal God, quote, "stern, judgmental, strict, jealous, a father figure writ large." She sees the story as reflecting and encapsulating the Jewish view of God as testing our faith and loyalty, and if we are deserving, he will rescue us at the last minute. Naomi Rosenblatt, in Wrestling with Angels, 1995, questions why God would do such a thing and why Abraham does not plead for his son as he did for the sinners of Sodom. Her answer is that it is a dream, and that Abraham works this through in the dream by realizing that his killing of his own son will thus kill off all his future generations. Marsha Mirkin in 2003 writes in Tikkun magazine that she sees a reinterpretation of the story in light of September 11th and sees it as a story of a man attempting to kill another human being in the name of faith. For Mirkin, the story offers a challenge to patriarchal culture as a whole. She sees patriarchal culture as valuing action over empathy. Abraham thus has to go against everything he has learned about maleness and open himself up to empathic listening. The miracle is when Abraham pauses when the angel calls his name and hears the angel tell him, "Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do anything to him." Mirkin concludes by reminding us that if we pause from our actions long enough, we can hear the voices of compassion. Before examining the psychoanalytic view of the near sacrifice of Isaac by his father, I want to remind this audience why this story is relevant for study of war. We know that in war, it has been said many times that old men send young men into battle. The soldiers are our boys. If a soldier dies in battle, he is making the supreme sacrifice. Dying for one's country is somehow an honor. The word patriotism comes from the Latin for father, pater, and war is seen as defending the fatherland. The psychoanalytic interpretation will be explored with an emphasis on the Oedipus complex and Laius complex, and my view that unconscious, hostile wishes of the father have been institutionalized into war. In classical psychoanalytic thinking, the Oedipus complex is central. Freud, in Totem and Taboo, theorized that the father of the primal horde was killed by the rebellious sons. After the murder, the sons felt guilty and reinstated the father as God. Freud saw this as the origin of religion. The Oedipus complex emphasizes the wish of the son to kill the father and marry the mother. This also applies to the wish of the daughter to kill the mother and marry the father. But Hyman Spotnitz and Martin Bergman point to the part of the legend ignored by Freud, which is the wish of the father to kill the sons. Oedipus's father, Laius, had been told by the oracle that he would kill his father and marry his mother. Laius and Jocasta, Oedipus's mother, sent him to a remote mountainside to die of exposure. Bergman sees Laius as having a wish to sacrifice his son. The psychoanalytic view is to see God as a projection of human impulses, including murderous ones. Thus, Abraham is acting on his own murderous impulses, or Laius complex, in attempting to sacrifice his son. If we flash forward 2,000 years, we have Jesus being sacrificed by God. For Christians, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Unlike Abraham and Isaac, the murder actually takes place. Christians believe that Jesus died for our sins, and for Bergman, the hostility of the Father is thus denied. In both the Abraham and Jesus stories, God is absolved of any hostile wishes. The notion of sacrifice involves a sacrificer, a victim, and some outside force. For Freud, the victim is a gift, a transforming agent, and a way of appeasing God or some other outside force. And the victim, Isaac or Jesus, is willing to die. Jesus' death was supposed to end the need for any further sacrifices. Now we flash forward another 2,000 years to the present. Child sacrifice has supposedly been abolished. Parents do not murder their children, nor do children murder their parents, for the most part. But we all have an unconscious in which these murderous impulses exist. If we are not able to acknowledge these impulses, they will be acted on in destructive ways. Since we are all born with both libidinal and aggressive drives, we can be influenced by our leaders to hate some person or group of people and have murderous feelings toward them. This is the creation of an enemy. In the late 1940s and early 50s, the enemy was communism. This was the outside force that we had to hate and to whom we had to offer up sacrificial victims. During those years, it was thought that there would be a nuclear war in which millions would perish. Better dead than red, we were told. Many of us protested, saying we didn't want to be either dead or red. In 1953, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed for conspiracy to commit espionage. That was the official charge. I was 13 years old and remembered an editorial in the local paper entitled Orchestra of 10 Million. The article stated that just because the Rosenbergs were Jewish didn't mean that all Jews share in their guilt. It sounded to me like all Jews are not responsible for killing Jesus. It frightened me then, and it was a very frightening time. I believe now that the Rosenbergs were sacrificed to the god of anti-communism. At the time, Eisenhower was the president. Presidents often single out some other world leader or outside force whom we are to hate or fear or even kill. When Kennedy was president, it was Castro. And President Kennedy and his brother Robert tried to kill Castro. With President Reagan, it was Gaddafi, the leader of Libya. Gaddafi is still around, as is Castro. Gaddafi is just now another world leader. It is easy to forget how he was made into a monster, a demon, a great threat. Reagan used the military to try to kill him. A bombing attack failed to kill Gaddafi, but did kill his daughter. The evil force today is terrorism. In order to fight terrorism, the U.S. has invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. The face of terrorism has been put on Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. How many thousands of soldiers will be sacrificed to appease the god of anti-terrorism? And will they too go willingly, like Isaac and Jesus? The electorate will get a chance this year to commit symbolic murder of the father by voting Bush out of office. In an interesting Oedipal twist, we have a president who is the son of a former president fighting the same monster, Saddam Hussein. Will Bush the younger try to outdo his father by slaying the dragon which his father could not do? Or will the electorate rise up and, in a repetition compulsion, throw the son out of office as it did the father? We'll see.